Time for Sports Lit 101 right now. And Bruce here to talk a bit more about a book we've mentioned a couple of times before. I really look forward to reading it. And we're going to hear from author Kevin Cowherd in a few weeks' time to learn more about When the Crowd Didn't Roar.
Yeah, this is the only chance you really have to get to go to something you weren't allowed to go to, in a sense. As people, I'll just sort of refresh on April 29, 2015, for the first time in Major League history, a Major League Baseball game that counted in the regular season was played and no fans were allowed into the ballpark. And it was a result of the tremendous civil unrest after the, I'm going to say murder, they can sue me if they like it, of Freddie Gray in Baltimore by the police. And it was the worst rioting that had happened in Baltimore of any kind since the summer of 1968, when virtually every large American city suffered from major riots. Some of them were improved as a result of it, but I don't want to get too far into that history. But what's really interesting about the book is that Cowherd had access to all the people who were there, and the game was carried on in every way the same way you would carry on a game if there was a crowd there. And he really gets into the different arguments to let people in, not let people in, the logistics back and forth in a very measured way. But I think the part that I can't wait to talk to him about is the recreation of the game itself. Now, your old friend Rich and long and friend of the show Gary Thorne, along with Jim Palmer, broadcast that game. They had to broadcast the game exactly as if there was a crowd there. But what they were saying could be heard by the players on the field. The stadium in Baltimore was that empty that people could hear the chatter between the catcher and the pitcher and people from the dugout who were in the press box. And so when Thorne and Jim Palmer were talking, people were hearing it. Now, out at the far end of I've not been to Camden Yards. You have.
I have, right? Many times, yeah.
Okay, out back at the far end where the gate is that you can see through, people gathered and tried to watch the game. But you're going to remember, the ball boys still had to be ball boys. The umpires still had to be umpires. The pitchers and players had to play, and the players had no sense of how to get ready for this. Great here in the very beginning when he's talking with Adam Jones about the game, and he said, just from the moment he woke up, he didn't know how to prepare, because as we know, baseball players especially are particularly superstitious. They got to put on the left cleat first or whatever, but they have these routines, and they were all interrupted. What's probably the strangest thing is during the seventh inning stretch, which they still have, even though there was no one there to stretch, they had to announce the attendance. That's what you do at Major League Baseball, and they announced zero. But the thing that was interesting, there were some attempts at humor early on. Well, they ought to be able to take the crowd out of it early, these kinds of, really sort of funny jokes. But what the players did was amazing. Some of them walked out and mimed signing autographs and greeting fans. They practiced tossing foul balls into the stands when there was no one there to give it to. Many of them went out and waved at the crowd and tipped their hat as they would have otherwise, because for them, they according to the book, many of them realized that that's what they love about baseball, that you play in front of a crowd. Now, Ubaldo Jimenez might want to have played all of his games without people, because he had been just getting it from the Baltimore fans all year. He went out and pitched a spectacular game. The problem with saying spectacular game is that I'm not sure anybody's heart was in it. The White Sox they'd already canceled two games with the White Sox. They were in a hurry to get on to, I think they were going to Cleveland next. They were in a hurry to get out of town. And the Orioles were supposed to be entertaining Tampa Bay, but they decided the situation was too volatile. So they changed, and they became the home team for three games down in Tampa. The thing about this is, I think it's so compelling, is when Camden Yards was built, it was purposely built in the Inner Harbor. It was purposely built downtown. I went to lots of games at the old Municipal Stadium in Baltimore when I was in college, because it was only an hour and a half ride down, and it was 50 cents to sit in the bleachers or a dollar. And I haven't been to Camden Yards. But that stadium was in a neighborhood, and it didn't impact the city in the same way Camden Yards does, because when it shut down, not only is Boog Powell's restaurant shut down, but all the bars and restaurants around it, all the public transportation, they don't need as many vehicles, the parking, all the kinds of things that were important to the Orioles goes away. And Peter Angelos never fussed about it. I got to tell you, I came away from this book with tremendous respect for two people that, you know, I didn't really know much about and didn't have any connection to. One is Peter Angelos, the whole Angelos family. Some of the things that he has since written about social justice and sports and the like is tremendous. But Buck Showalter, this is an interesting part of the book. His father was a high school principal. He'd been a military guy down on the panhandle line between Alabama and Florida. Now, I don't know how many of you have been there. I have. I worked on an oil well down there once. That is real swamp country. It is not a place where there's a lot, at least when I was down there, a lot of enlightened thought. And his father fought to to integrate the schools, to end segregation. He was principal. He reached out and hired African-American people. He taught Buck Showalter that you should always, all of your life, respect everybody, regardless of their skin color, their background, whatever. So here's Showalter saying to him, and he's wrestling with himself, you know, should we be playing this game when all this is going on? Isn't something far more important than baseball happening here? But this is my job. These are my players. I have something to do. What Cowherd gets to in the book are all the difficult decisions, and he doesn't judge any of them. There were leaders of the civil rights movement in the area who wanted to play, others who said it was definitely wrong to play. But I think one of the things that's really great is I know a lot of people out there are fans of The Wire. I certainly remember Stack telling us he'd seen every season at least five times or something. David Simon, who created The Wire and certainly knows Baltimore well, wrote a tremendous blurb on the back of this book, which I encourage people to get and to listen to. And I'm really looking forward to asking Cowherd when we have him on, which is the end of next month. I want to get into that end of the hot stove, early part of the spring training time. What his lasting takeaways are, because I want to let him talk about them rather than me try and say what they were. But it's really interesting. And Gary Thorne, as I say, Gary Thorne is in here a lot, and he really is someone who saw the game in a way that none of the rest of us will see. And maybe I know you're going to try and see if we can't talk to him about it too. But it's called "When the Crowd Didn't Roar: How Baseball's Strangest Game Ever Gave a Broken City Hope." By Kevin Cowherd. A really good book. People should, if you're a fan at all of any kind of sport, I think you'll like this.
Yeah, looking forward to reading that. And yeah, we'll try and catch up with Gary and get his thoughts before Kevin comes on with us. And we've got a couple other authors lined up for the weeks ahead to talk about books that we've discussed on the segment.
Yeah, Ed Rice is going to come in and talk about his new edition of Baseball's First Indian, which now has a place in the Baseball Hall of Fame.
Now, is that next week? No.
No, that's a week after next, okay. I think. And then we're going to talk with Tim Spears, the author of Spirals, about a family and their legacy with football. That's a great book. I really enjoyed that. And I think from some email exchanges, that'll be good. And then we've got coming up, not too distant future, I just got this one in today. I moved it to the up in the queue because I really want to read it. It's called Different Strokes, Serena Venus and the Unfinished Black Tennis Revolution. I think it'll dovetail really well with the book that we talked about, Ray Arsenault's book.
Oh, about Arthur Ashe.
About Arthur Ashe last year. And then Culture on Two Wheels. He's got to have a cycling book every year. And this is a series of essays that written by some people that have been on the show about the history of cycling and the importance of bicycling in today's world. And thanks to the Bangor City Council for keeping the bus in Pickering Square. And maybe we'll get even more bicycle stuff to go with the public transportation and keep Bangor moving forward.
There you go. Thank you, Bruce.
My pleasure, sir.
Sports Lit 101 every Wednesday here on Downtown.